Gamma foresees a possible economic recovery. It's official. Gamera 2 sets a new record for human-powered rotary flight. And the highs and lows of a week at NASA. This is Aero News for Monday, August 13, 2012. I'm Glenn Moyer. Gamma has released the results of the first 6 months of general aviation industry shipments and billings, and the figures are good. Good enough to possibly foresee the beginning of an economic recovery for the general aviation industry. Airplane shipments increased 5.9% in the first 6 months of 2012 compared to 2011, while the accompanying value of the airplane's deliveries rose 13.2%. Only sales of piston singles showed a slight decline. Business jet deliveries increased 13.1% to 294 airplanes in the first half of the year compared to the same time period last year. Turboprop airplane deliveries also improved to 243 units from the 2011 level of 220 units. The piston engine airplane segment was basically flat at 381 deliveries, or a 1.6% decline compared to the first 6 months of 2011. Gamma's president and CEO Pete Bunce said, quote, "We are starting to see positive signs in the 2012 shipment data. When coupled with the positive trend we are seeing in the used market, we may finally be witnessing the start of our recovery. However, significant impediments remain in our member company's ability to bring new, innovative, and safety-enhancing products to our customers. While we have seen positive steps by FAA's leadership to improve the effectiveness and efficiency of the certification process, much work remains to be done to take full advantage of the opportunities offered by improving and emerging markets," end quote. Gamma's third quarter general aviation shipment report is scheduled to be published in November. The National Aeronautic Association has certified the June 21, 2012 flight of Gamera 2 at 49.9 seconds, just a tick under 50 seconds, and a new national record for human-powered helicopter flight duration, and submitted the flight information to the Fédération Aéronautique Internationale for approval as a world record. Gamera 2 was designed, built, and piloted by students at the A. James Clark School of Engineering at the University of Maryland, College Park. The new record far surpasses the student's 2011 world record of 11.4 seconds made with Gamera 1 and any prior unofficial flights by any other teams. Of course, these records are all about winning the American Helicopter Society's Sikorsky Human-Powered Helicopter Competition, which requires that a human-powered helicopter fly for 60 seconds, achieve an altitude of 3 meters at some point during that time, and remain within a 10-square-meter area. The prize for meeting all competition requirements is $250,000, offered by the Sikorsky Aircraft Corporation. With its 49.9-second flight, Gamera 2 has come closer to the flight duration requirement than any other craft. The team will fly again later this month and continues to refine their craft to achieve the Sikorsky competition's 60-second flight and the 3-meter altitude requirements. Just last week, the team test flew their craft in the University of Maryland's Comcast Center using a tether and stayed aloft for more than 70 seconds. While NASA was celebrating the success of the Curiosity rover landing on Mars, another program suffered a setback on Thursday when the Morpheus lander prototype crashed and burned only a few seconds after lifting off on its first autonomous flight. Morpheus is a NASA-designed vehicle. It was manufactured and assembled at JSC and Armadillo Aerospace. Morpheus is large enough to carry 1,100 pounds of cargo to the moon. According to the program's blog, Morpheus is a vertical testbed vehicle demonstrating new green propellant propulsion systems and autonomous landing and hazard detection technology. Morpheus had successfully completed 19 tethered flights before Thursday's first untethered attempt, including one last Friday. In a video release, NASA said, quote, "Failures such as these were anticipated prior to the test and are a part of the development process of any complex spaceflight hardware," end quote. The Associated Press reports that NASA said the likely cause of the crash was a component in the GPS navigation system. No one was injured, and the resulting fire was extinguished by Kennedy Space Center fire personnel. Indiana's National Center for Complex Operations, or NCCO, announced the state's new partnership with Ohio last week to pursue a designation as one of the 6 FAA UAS test sites. The NCCO is Indiana's lead organization for coordinating access to the state's defense assets for military, government, and non-government customers. The two states see great advantages in leveraging their combined assets to compete against more than two dozen other states. According to the FAA, the research done at the test sites will help the agency develop regulatory standards to foster unmanned aircraft systems technology and operational procedures. It will also add to the data the FAA needs to eventually permit routine UAS operations in the national airspace. Growth in the multi-billion dollar unmanned aerial systems industry is expected to skyrocket in the next decade. It is anticipated that by winning the test site designation, new jobs will be created by contractors who locate or expand their presence in the two states and from spin-off jobs created by this growth. From an economic development standpoint, pursuing the joint partnership is a win-win proposition for both states. When Aero News continues, a book for wannabe pilots is now free. A new Army blimp flies for the first time. And available for rent or lease, one used 15,000-foot runway.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher-performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
We continue now with Aero News. It's Monday, August the 13th. I'm Glenn Moyer. Author and private pilot Ted Seastrom is now offering free of charge his book about learning to fly an airplane from a student's perspective. Learning to Fly an Airplane, Insider Information from a Student Perspective, that's the title, opens up the private pilot flight training process. Its goal is to help would-be pilots get the most value for their time, money, and effort. This is not a book about how to fly. Instead, it walks prospective pilots through each stage of the training process, warning them of the pitfalls and encouraging them when facing unexpected challenges. Author Seastrom says, quote, "This is the book I wish I'd read before taking my first flying lesson. As a recent student, I believe you'll improve your chances for success if you know more about flight training going in. You'll definitely have more fun and less frustration," end quote. Seastrom's motivation for writing the book was the nearly 70% dropout rate of student pilots working toward their private pilot certificates. With his own training experience fresh in mind, he decided to provide helpful insights into the process entirely from the student perspective. Learning to Fly an Airplane is for anyone who's thinking about becoming a private pilot and for those interested in how pilots are trained. Commercial pilot training is not discussed. The book's focus is on flight training in the United States, although many countries use a similar approach. Seastrom is an author, technical writer, and private pilot. The book can be read online or downloaded as a PDF. In its first flight, the Army's hybrid air vehicle known as the Long Endurance Multi-Intelligence Vehicle, or LEMV, stayed aloft over Joint Base McGuire-Dix Lakehurst, New Jersey, for more than 90 minutes on August the 7th. The LEMV, like a blimp, is capable of carrying multiple intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance payloads for more than 21 days at altitudes greater than 22,000 feet. The U.S. Army Space and Missile Defense Command, Army Forces Strategic Command, conducted the first flight test of the vehicle. The LEMV is intended to be used to conduct long-term intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, or ISR, missions and persistent stare-type missions, and can also be used as a communications relay. The primary objective of the first flight was to perform a safe launch and recovery of the LEMV. A secondary goal was to verify the flight control system operations. Additional objectives included airworthiness testing and demonstration, as well as system-level performance verification. All objectives were met during the first flight. The FAA is proposing a $681,200 civil penalty against Federal Express of Memphis, Tennessee, for allegedly violating U.S. Department of Transportation hazardous materials regulations. The FAA alleges that between August the 2nd and August 12th of 2010, FedEx employees in numerous locations around the country improperly accepted several dozen shipments containing hazardous materials for transportation by air. The FAA also alleges that in 19 instances on August 12th of 2010, the airline failed to provide pilots of the flights to and from Los Angeles with the required accurate and legible written information about shipments of hazardous materials. Additionally, the FAA alleges FedEx failed to document hazardous materials training and testing for three individuals who were among those accepting those shipments for the company. The training includes security awareness and initial and recurrent training on the handling of hazardous materials. This training is necessary to ensure compliance with hazmat regulations. Federal Express now has 30 days from the receipt of the FAA's enforcement letter to respond to the agency. Available for rent or lease, a slightly used 15,000-foot, almost 40-year-old runway. Well, that's not exactly what the sign says, but NASA's Kennedy Space Center is seeking new ways to use the Space Shuttle Landing Facility, or SLF, for current and future spaceflight mission support through a Request for Information, or RFI. Kennedy wants to identify potential industry interest in the operation and maintenance of the SLF, modifying it into a multi-purpose launch and landing facility supporting a wide range of space and aerospace customers. With NASA's transition from the Space Shuttle program to future commercial and government mission activities, the facility currently is underutilized. The SLF first opened for flights in 1976 and was specifically designed for returning shuttles to Kennedy. The concrete runway is 15,000 feet long and 300 feet wide. The SLF is capable of handling all types and sizes of aircraft and is especially suited for very large and very heavy transport craft. Kennedy may enter into an agreement in which a partner would operate and maintain the SLF at their expense. In the RFI, Kennedy seeks concepts for how customers would use and maintain the facility in order to make an agreement feasible. Well, if the shuttle landing facility is underused, it would seem to me that perhaps so is the vehicle assembly building. While I have no idea what to do with a 15,000-foot runway, just in case, I am preparing a proposal for NASA to turn the VAB into the world's largest rock wall climbing facility. I'm sure it'd be a big hit with the tourists in Florida. I'm Glenn Warrior. You're now cleared for departure.